Well, howdy do and good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Food Friday, September 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back our buddy chef Rick Orlando. Rick is a chef, as I mentioned. He's an entrepreneur, a writer, and leader of culinary tours of Italy. Today, you know, all right, here's the thing. When Rick is on, he talks about whatever he wants. And today he said we're talking about peak harvest. All those wonderful things that come from the ground and what you can do with them. He just put a bowl of red and yellow things that appear to be vegetables on the table. We'll find out. Give us a call. Share the fun. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551 or voxpop at wamc.org. Back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the program, we welcome back our buddy, Chef Rick Orlando. Rick is the owner of the Richter Scale brand, makers of Rick Orlando's best line of hot sauce, barbecue sauce, and custom spice rubs, including the legendary Purple Haze psychedelic hot sauce. He's a chef instructor for Capital Region and Kingston area not-for-profits. Rick writes a monthly column in Sante Food and Wine magazine. He hosts monthly pop-up dinners occasionally, and he more than occasionally takes small groups on immersive food, farm, wine, and culture tours of Sicily. It's great to have him on this program. He's a busy dude. The number to call is 800-348-2551 as we talk about delicious things that are being harvested now. 800-348-2551. And you can email voxpop at wamc.org. Rick Orlando, how you doing?
Ray Graff, I'm doing well. Aside from a torn meniscus and I'm hobbling a bit, I'm good.
What happened? You're walking like I walk, and I'm an old timer.
I stumbled. It was funny. I had a group in Sicily in late June, and I said, really important thing about Italy, they don't have really psychotic liability laws like we are. If you fall and hurt yourself, they'll probably say, well, it was a stair. Didn't you see it? As I was telling that story, I fell forward and smashed my knee.
You know,
I got karma'd.
As my German grandmother used to say, the genie punishes.
But it took almost a month to figure out that it was actually, it just swelled up and was sore. And then eventually I said, this is not going away.
Well, good thing you don't have a tour coming up for a while. I mean, you'll be fine.
I'll be in Sicily for 6 weeks starting, well, Sicily and Puglia starting August 3rd until November 15th. October 3rd.
That's pretty close. How are you going to hobble around, man?
Listen, I'm doing pop-up dinners and all kinds of stuff all over the place. It's at Chef and Vintner's Harvest Dinner for the Food Bank, the 30th annual. I'm doing that.
Wow.
Actually, Sunday, I'm down in New Jersey in Union City doing a competition against the legendary master chef David Burke.
No way.
He's got a thing called Beat Burke, and they invited me to come down, so I'm going to come down and hobble around and compete against David Burke.
David Burke, great. David Burke Prime, very nice. They had one at Foxwoods. They might still. And years ago, my wife and I went to that. We were staying there and loved the place. But the chairs were really funky. It was
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, okay. I think they looked like cows or something. I can't remember exactly.
Well, he's definitely the master of kitsch. You know, the bacon clothesline, the foie gras lollipops. Like, he's a master of that.
I think I was on a losing streak, so I wasn't in the best mood. But the food was pretty good. All right. We're talking about things that grow today. It's a kind of a good time of year for that.
I mean, I just came from a couple of my favorite farm markets. I live down in Woodstock, so my three biggies, can I mention them?
Sure.
Story Farms, Catskill, Black Horse Farms, I guess that's Coxsackie or Athens, and then Davenport's down in Stone Ridge. This time of year, I mean, I go three times a week.
Yeah.
It makes no sense to go into the supermarket to buy that stuff. Get in your car, go to the farm stand or the local farm store or the farmer's market. It's not just shopping. It's an activity to make you feel like a human being. Oh, look.
And people love the farmer's markets.
Yeah.
Must confess, I don't go out of the house much, but people tell me they're fantastic.
The farmer's markets are great, and the farm stands are great. And you know, we have a very short window, right? July, things start happening, but aside from squash and kale, by mid-October, we're done. So now is the time. Corn is amazing. The tomatoes are still amazing. The watermelon is incredible. The cucumbers are still great. I brought this strange...
Yeah, what the heck is that?
Well, I bought some heirloom squash seeds in Sicily and planted them, and I have about 100 feet of squash plants caged in. Two plants. Like, it's like, yeah.
I've seen the way pumpkins run. Squash does
absolute
the same thing.
Absolute madness. Yeah. And they're kind of like butternut squash, but pale green with
stripes.
Have you
tried eating them?
Yeah. I made you some pumpkin mulligatawny.
Oh, now I have to try eating them. Okay.
It's in like an Indian red lentil soup. I made you a caprese salad with corn that was dry roasted, and I made a Thai watermelon salad because everybody makes Greek watermelon salad, which I've made a million times, but the Thai watermelon salad is mind-blowing.
Now, here's a news flash. I've never even had Greek watermelon salad, but this one has peanuts in it, so that's bonus points in my book.
Peanuts, a little chili, a little fish sauce, a little lime juice, watermelons, cucumbers, onions, cilantro.
Yeah.
Mint. Delicious.
We're joined by Chef Rick Orlando. Today we talk about peak harvest on this edition of Food Friday. It's 800-348-2551 if you want to join the conversation and chat with Chef Rick, 800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org. You mentioned kale as kind of a late thing that we will have throughout the season. Are you a kale buff at all?
Yeah, I mean... I don't think it's the greatest thing in the world, but I like kale. Yes,
well,
I mean, like kale a lot.
Nature's whisk broom, right? Let's be fair.
Well, so here's the thing. I mean, I had a very successful kale salad on my menu for quite some time. However, in thousands of years of greens like kale being grown, no culture has ever eaten them raw.
Oh.
Because we think we
How do you know?
I've Googled it.
Well, then it must be true.
Well, no, I mean, I do a lot of food research.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure people have eaten it raw in a pinch, but in general, all of those dark leafy greens should be cooked.
Even spinach and things.
Contrary to your common 1970s, early 80s inaccurate food science, you get more nutrients when you cook it a long time.
Everything? I know we've talked about...
Kale, collard greens... spinach. Here's what happens. First of all, let's look at who eats these greens. Eastern Europeans, Southerners, African Americans. Do they ever serve al dente kale?
No.
Cook
I don't know.
Cook the heck out of it and paired with fat, because here's what happens. In its raw state, so that, you know, America does this strange type of food research. They'll take a kale leaf and say, this leaf has this many nutrients in it. But what happens when you eat it? Your body has to digest it.
Yeah.
So raw kale is a broom. It cleans you out.
Right.
You don't get a lot out of it because you can't break it down because there's a lot of cellulose.
Yeah.
So when you cook it a nice long time, all those minerals release into there. You want the minerals. I think I told you this story once when I was in Italy. In Puglia, I had broccoli rabe pasta, and the broccoli rabe was cooked till it was almost melted. It was really soft, breaking apart, and it was delicious. It was really sweet. It didn't have any bitterness. I said to the chef, I said, this is really awesome. I've never cooked broccoli rabe this much. Are you worried about cooking out the vitamins? And he says, vitamins? What vitamins? I said, well, it's got a lot of vitamin C. And he points out the window to a grove of lemon trees, goes, this is your vitamin C. The green vegetable, you wanted the minerals. Because they're full of folic acid. They're full of all these great minerals, copper and zinc. And when you cook them a long time, especially paired with a fat, normally it'd be a ham bone or a fish head, but you can also do olive oil. The minerals bind with the fat, and you digest them, and you get more nutrients out of it that way. And then you drink what they call down south the pot liquor, the cooking liquid, which is full of minerals also.
Spinach, that's a dark green leafy vegetable, right? I love it raw. It's one of those things I don't even
like it raw
cooked.
Too.
I
like
you telling
it raw.
Me it's not good for me when I eat it raw?
No, it's fine for you. You're going to get nutrients out of it. There's no doubt. But to maximize them, you want to cook it. Now, spinach is interesting because of the convenience of supermarket marketing, most of the spinach Americans buy is in a plastic box, and it's baby spinach. And baby spinach is great for salad. It's really delicate. You got to chew it. Chew it well. But the spinach that's cooked, and you'll find it at the farm stands now, is the big spinach with the stalky branches. That's the most nutritious spinach.
Why is it different?
It has time to get the roots in the dirt, pull all that, you know, get that earthy flavor.
Yeah.
Some people say, ooh, it's a little bitter, ooh, it's a little earthy. Exactly. You got to learn to like bitter if you want to live a long time. Anyway. Well, you go to Tuscany.
Or be bitter. And
you know, they cook it down. Like
forever.
Cream spinach, you cook down. Yeah, well, bitter. I don't know about that. Bitter can catch up to you.
Yeah, maybe. It hasn't caught up to me yet.
I never think of you as bitter. Just sardonic. But
the
not
number
bitter.
Is 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando's here. And it's great when Rick comes on this show. He's going to hobble his way to Italy in early October, which now, do you offer maybe. All right, maybe I'll be your business manager.
Okay.
You offer a couple of the people on the tour discount if they carry you around. What do you think? You could get one of those things like the gold kings used to have.
That'd be nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a little, how about a little baby elephant?
Four. Okay. Well, that might not be politically correct, but you could try.
Well, there's plenty of them in Sicily. I'll be fine. I'll hobble a bit, but I'll be fine. I'm getting gel shots. I can do it. I mean, yeah.
Not jello shots. That's different.
They're like jello shots, but they're for the knee.
Okay.
No, I'll be fine. I've got a group, two groups in October and then one in early November, and I have like 10 days in between. So I'm going to go up to Puglia, meet my new guide because I'm offering a Puglia tour next year. So I'm going to go meet all of my contacts.
So when you go, you will have one tour and folks fly out. You're not with them when they fly out.
No, we let people do their own flights because a lot of people want to use points or they want to use a particular card. But once you land in your airport, we have a car service that picks you up. You don't have to worry about anything until the tour is over. And then our car service, you give us your itinerary. They'll bring you back to the airport leave from. So you're mine. For 9 days.
You have two tours. So you'll have some downtime. You'll stay. And then the next tour arrives.
I only have 3 days between the first two. And then I have almost 12 days between that one and the November one. So I'll hang out. I'll go visit my son in Lucca. And then I'm going to rent a car and drive from Lucca to Bari through Abruzzo because I've never done the mountains there. So that'll be fun.
So when you were toiling all those years in your own restaurants and others, did you ever dream this would be your golden parachute?
I don't know about golden
Not
parachute.
Not that you're that old.
You know, I did, and I raised kids like everybody else.
Yeah.
I didn't really start international travel until my 50s. I mean, I went on a few places, Guatemala, but for the most part, I couldn't do that. I couldn't drag the kids.
Right.
But when the restaurant was still open in Saugerties, I did my first New Orleans tour, and that inspired me to do a Sicily tour. My kids wanted to get Italians, found out we were eligible for Italian citizenship right around after the election of 2016. They said, hey, let's get dual citizenship. So we had to go to Sicily. We found out I kind of knew, but found out for sure that's where all my relatives were from. And once we tracked them down and went there and went to the little villages, I said, oh, my God, I have to share this. Now, it's not a bad thing, but Sicily is getting discovered now. The White Lotus had a lot to do with it, the television show, social media.
I mean, Sicily has kind of been on the map for some time.
But, I mean, as far as a place to go, that's very cool.
Yeah.
You know, and also because the mafia has been kind of out of – the mafia exists everywhere, but out of the day-to-day existence of people in Sicily since about – 2000. So there's almost like a renaissance there. Everyone is out. Every city's like a festival every night. There's a celebratory feeling. But we also, what I've worked on is try to create like an Anthony Bourdain type experience where, yes, we see some obligatory things you need to see, a couple of cathedrals, et cetera. But a lot of it, we're in the mountains with families, with farmers, fishermen. Really cool stuff.
Let's take a break. Rick Orlando's our guest today. It's Peak Harvest, 800-348-2551. That's the number, 800-348-2551. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. Frank West, Thad Jones, Blues for Butterball is that one on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551, and it's not even a Thanksgiving show yet. Chef Rick Orlando is our guest. He is the owner of the Richter Scale brand, makers of Rick Orlando's best line of hot sauce, and including the Purple Haze, which is one of my favorites. In fact, I've yet to come up with a cocktail that I could use that in. Maybe a Bloody Mary.
Could be. Yeah, Bloody Mary or a mojito. So you know what else I've added to my product line? I'm making tomato sauce, smooth and a chunky.
Yeah.
and I'm importing ancient grain pasta and single source. I'm talking single source, like one farm olive oil from Sicily. And they're awesome.
We talked about that. Did you bring it in last time?
I think I gave you some.
Yeah, it was awesome.
There you go.
By the way, this yellow soup is pretty good. What is that?
So that's, I call it pumpkin mulligatawny. It's not really pumpkin, although they're all related. It's this funny little heirloom squash.
Oh, so that's the one.
Yeah.
The
it's
mutant
like a
squash.
Butternut squash-ish.
Yeah.
And it's a red dal soup, a red lentil soup with a ginger, garlic, onion puree, a little turmeric. Water. I mean, you're eating healthy, delicious food, right?
And it's really.
And I put the chunks of butternut squash.
And
in
I love that.
The
it's
last
rich
half
and thick.
Hour of cooking. Yeah.
So good. All right, let's grab one email here before we go to the phones. This is from Catherine. Hey, have you ever published a book of your recipes from your days at New World?
I have a book that is pretty old, but it's good. It's called We Want Clean Food.
Oh,
you
yeah.
You can find it on Amazon. That was a companion to my. WMHT, can I say that?
Well, you just did.
Series that I did in 2003 or whatever. So it's aged enough. It's faded, which is available. And I have two that I'm in the process of putting out. I also have a Substack, rickorlando.substack, which gets a new recipe every 10 days or so.
Remind me, I got to put that link on that on our page.
Yep, and I have rickorlando.com. There's a recipe page there. There's a ton of YouTube videos. So there's a lot of recipes everywhere, but yeah, we're trying to pull together a simple recipe book, hopefully by the holidays. I have a memoir, and I also have a book about Sicilian recipes that are all within like 2 or 3 weeks of getting to the editor, so hopefully we'll get them done while I'm away. It's part of my travel.
How you do all this stuff, you know?
What else do I do?
All right, let's go to
the dog.
Let's go to the phones. There are other things for me to try.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have some more of the
mulligatawny.
Mutant squash mulligatawny in a moment. Let's go to our friend Joan in Schenectady. Joan, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Hello, Chef Rick. How
Hello,
are you both?
Hello, Joan of the voice that sounds like a pearls flowing through olive oil.
Balsamic vinegar. All right, go ahead.
Okay, except for the balsamic vinegar. You had me on pearls in oil. Okay. hi. I also wanted to do a little soundtrack. I couldn't resist for the baby elephant walk.
Mm-hmm.
I got a challenge, a slight challenge.
Okay.
I harvested yesterday a foraged mushroom, one that I'm certain of, giant puffball.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine like six and a half inch small ball.
Yeah, that's a small one.
They can get bigger.
Yep.
I have several ideas. You know, I usually just slice it or crumble it. But I thought you could also give me some fabulous ideas for my find.
Yeah, okay. Sure. So puffballs are. I'd say they're not super richly flavored. They've got a mild mushroom flavor. The most important thing, you cut it open, make sure it's not turning graphite or gray color in the middle, because then it's going bad and has some toxins.
Oh, geez.
If it's pure white, one of the things we did with it is we actually made cutlets out of it. Sliced it into, like, you know, 3 by 4 inch little pieces, and we would either flour them or bread them and saute them. We would make all the things you would make with cutlets. Puffball mushroom marsala, puffball mushroom Marseille, mushroom marsala, mushroom parmigiana, mushroom with a puffball mushrooms with a mushroom, like a forestiere with a mushroom and red wine sauce. They make nice cutlets because they have great texture. Don't cut them too thin.
Right.
Cut them at least a third of an inch, so they maybe even a little more. And then you just kind of pan fry them, and then you can sauce them up.
So it's kind of an open palate, like a tofu or...
It is, you know what? I guess it's the closest thing to a mushroom tofu. It's a big white ball that's just a creamy, somewhat firm, but not too firm, white center. Yeah.
Joan, you want to follow up, buddy?
Yeah. I just want to say I did take photographs. Of course, I heard that you don't like photographs for a radio show. No problem.
Okay, I'm
but
glad.
But fear not, the fun drive is coming up, so I promise.
Thank you.
It was grown in a usual shape.
You know what, Joan? You know what? I love that you brought up the fun drive, because it is coming. It's just ahead on the calendar. So if anybody wants to make a pledge now at WAMC.org, We're going to feed that lockbox, and we are going to have some fun. We're going to raise some money. Feel free. If you like what you hear with Chef Rick Orlando, give us a shout. Give us a couple of bucks. It's WAMC.org. Hey, Joan, have a great weekend. Thanks a lot.
And tell them Rick, Rick and Joan sent you.
Yeah, Rick and Joan, and we appreciate the call. Let's go to Morgan in Williamstown. Morgan, you're on with Chef Rick Orlando.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks, Rick, for taking the call.
Hi, Morgan.
When you mentioned Puglia, it sparked something. I have some colleagues who've recently taken over management of an olive farm in Puglia, mm-hmm. and it's they're using syntropic production methods, kind of a regenerative mm-hmm. agroforestry type method, and the results are just unbelievable, both in the oil itself, but also it's like the only green area surrounded by brown.
Yeah, well, it's pretty arid, and it's been very hot, too, you know, and Italy's been very hot.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it has. My sister's there. And it's, in any case, it's just, if you get a chance, Amadeco is the name of it. And it's a cool place.
Do you know where they are in Puglia? What area? Like down?
Depressa. I'm the address.
I don't need the address, but you can find me online and email me if you want, because I'm going to be there in
Depressa.
November.
Yeah, I lived in Depressa for years. All right, go ahead, Morgan. Finish it up.
The other thing is we've just taken over a farm in Williamstown called Green River Farm, and once we're up and going, we'd love to host you, Ray.
Oh.
And Rick.
Well, I don't get out much, but I bet Rick does if his knees will handle it.
Morgan, oh, I could handle anything.
Thanks a lot. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Food Friday, Peak Harvest, with Chef Rick Orlando. And, all right, this is one of two things that look very similar. What is this?
That is a capri salad. So it's beautiful mozzarella.
I love the mozzarella.
Right, that I made. With tomatoes from, I think those are from Story.
You made the mozzarella. Hold it, stop. Yeah. You made the mozzarella.
Yeah, it's just curd.
No way. How long does it take you to do that?
A few minutes, and then you just let it sit, and then you pull it. So, you know, it's not very hard. It's milk.
You're kidding
me,
man.
It's milk and enzymes.
Okay, all right, stop. All right. Now you
milk
know.
Milk and enzymes. Hold on. And then it's got the tomatoes from the garden and basil and my single source olive oil that I import from Sicily.
Oh, so this is the stuff.
And then I took corn, and I just put corn as it is. I have a video on YouTube that's very popular every year. Yeah. I'll repost it. You just take the corn just as it is. You don't do anything to it. You don't soak it. You don't clean it. And you just put them in a 400-degree oven for about 20 or 25 minutes until the corn gets kind of golden, and then you take it out of the oven and let it steam in its own husk, and then you shuck it. So it's really sweet. So it's corn.
I love this.
Simple.
I love I could drink the olive oil.
You
not
can
joking.
Put balsamic on it if you want.
Look at that. I
won't. That's real balsamic from Modena.
Look at this, man.
I'm kind of up and down on it. I mean, I love balsamic, but sometimes when the tomatoes are really great, I feel like they kind of cancel out some of the flavor of the tomatoes. It's like two types of acid at the same time. It's a weird trip. So I
how do you pronounce this? Aceite?
Aceite di balsamico di Modena.
And that's nice stuff. Okay.
Yeah. And we actually started doing another tour in that part of Italy where we learn how balsamic's made. We learn how prosciutto's made.
You know, we have an email here from, it doesn't say, but says, A, your pasta's amazing, but the olive oil is like pure gold, the finest I've ever had. What's the difference in olive oil?
You want to talk olive oil?
Yeah, just
really
for a minute,
important.
Man. Then we'll go back to the phones.
People always ask me at all my cooking classes because it's very confusing. And social media and traditional media, they're always putting their heads in places where they don't belong.
Hey, now.
They're always looking for clickbait. Here's the deal with olive oil. In your house, you need two olive oils. You need what we call a workhorse oil. That you use for sautéing and cooking. I like to recommend that it comes from a single country, not blended from other places, only because oxygen is the enemy of olive oil, and the more times you're opening and mixing, the more times that you're losing the polyphenols. So, like, for home, I usually buy Greek olive oil. It's not super expensive. That's my cooking oil. But then for the superfood, you want a premium finishing oil. And you're going to pay a lot for it. You're going to pay like those bottles. Well, my bottle's not here. I'm sorry.
No prices.
500 milliliters. And they're a lot. I mean, they're not a fortune, but they're a lot.
Well, I've been to the store. I've been sent out to get olive oil. But, and even if you buy the cheap stuff, it's expensive.
Well,
nowadays.
You can buy like the 3 liters of the cheap stuff. Yeah, you can buy it online. But this is what makes this magic and high polyphenol and why in Sicily and in Puglia, they talk about the magic of olive oil. I have a heavy 2 teaspoons every morning raw before I have my coffee.
Oh, come on.
I do.
Why don't you put it in your coffee?
Well, people do that. It's not the same.
People do that?
Yeah. Just, they have this fake olive oil stuff at Buckstars that they sell that are just horrible. But the idea is heat and light damage the polyphenols, so you want it raw. So this olive oil is not only what we would call single source, it's a single place. In Prizzi, Sicily, we went to a brewery. I want to visit this brewery. And when we're in the brewery, the young guys are running the brewery, and it's a long industrial building, not gigantic, maybe 8,000 square feet. And on the other side, there's a big olive oil press, and I see they're pressing olives. And I'm like, what's this? Oh, we make olive oil every year. We make about 1,000 cases. These are our olives. The next day I went back, helped them pick olives, and said, can I get some of this? And I bought a pallet. But that olive oil has never been, once it's pressed and put in the bottles, it
not
never
opened.
Sees air. Never opened again. Never blended. Guaranteed source. Certified organic. Certified non-toxic, which means they test the soil to see if there are any toxins.
Metals and whatnot.
Because there's a ton of metals in a lot of our food.
Yeah.
Nothing. 0.0% toxins.
Let me ask you a question. Now, you said oxygen is the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But light. Now, when you get an imported beer that's in a green bottle from Europe, oftentimes it will have been sitting on a shelf or on a boat or a plane or whatever, mm-hmm. and it gets a lot of light and it gets skunked. There's an actual chemical reaction.
Right.
Does that happen with olive oil?
Well,
it's coming a long way.
Right. The reason why they put them in dark bottles or brown bottles or tins or even some of the premium ones like Rienzi from Tuscany is like wrapped in like a gold foil is to protect it from light. Yeah, you never want to buy olive oil in a clear bottle, even though it looks good. Ooh, look at that oil. Even fluorescent lights.
What about cans? I see the metal cans.
The tins are fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as they're lined. And the thing is, any olive oil is a good oil to use for cooking. It's better than like, you know, canola, soybean, all that stuff. And I cook in olive oil all the time. I actually will blend it with avocado oil sometimes when I'm pan frying.
Yeah.
But for finishing, raw, on your pasta, on your salad, on your cheese, on a piece of bread, the better the olive oil, the better the results.
Do me a favor. Someday when you are on again, let's do a blind taste test because I guarantee you I will not be able to tell a cheap olive oil from a good olive oil.
Can you tell a cheap bourbon from a good bourbon?
Yeah, of course.
Then you'll do it with olive oil.
Let's grab one more call before the next break. 800-348-2551. You had me at bourbon. Let's go to Stephanie in either Jersey City or Red Hook. What is it, Stephanie?
Hi. Hi, Ray and guest.
Hi, guest. How are you?
About,
caller.
well, thank you. I have a question about corn.
Okay.
I live in New Jersey, and we have a beautiful thing called white corn.
Mm-hmm.
It is tender. It is sweet. You could actually eat it raw off the cob. It's so good. And up in New York State, when I go to these farms, there is no white corn. And I find the bicolor corn to be really tough. And not sweet at all.
Hmm.
And
that's interesting. Where do you buy your bicolor corn? From a farm stand?
Yeah, I went to two different farm stands here in Red Hook, and I was just so disappointed. So
no names, please.
I had to go to one of my farmers markets around me in New Jersey in order to get it, and it's so tender that when I make a soup and the directions say, once you cook it, you take the kernels off the cob and you cook it, you know, you press it and you emulsify it, you put it through a sieve,
mm-hmm.
because you'll get the rough husks. And I just don't even do that because the corn is so tender and luscious.
Right,
and
that fiber is good
but
for
nobody
anyway.
Nobody knows about Jersey corn.
Oh, I know about Jersey corn. I grew up in Connecticut. I know Connecticut corn, upstate corn, Jersey corn. I have not found that to be the case. I have found the corn, for instance, that we have here to be sweet as candy. It is bicolor. I have found pure white corn. You know how they make corn sweet, right? It's I'm not going to say genetically modified. It's botanically enhanced. They change the DNA of the corn. The corn, as the corn ripens, the sugars convert to starch. Once you pick it, the sugars convert to starch really quickly. That's why some of the good farm stands, like I know at Black Horse, they have morning corn and afternoon corn because you want to get it when it's fresh.
Wow.
So a lot of this corn has been modified. Again, not GMO where it's killing weeds by its own leaves, but so it grows differently, so botanically enhanced, to slow down the conversion of starch and keep the sugars in the corn.
Mm.
But it's delicious. I love white corn. But the corn we have here, that
it's
brought,
darn
is
good
really
there,
darn sweet.
I'll have to give it another try.
All right.
Yes, go on my YouTube channel and find my How to Preserve Your Summer Corn video, because I'll show you, Rick Orlando, Chef Rick Orlando on YouTube, how to buy a bag of corn or 20 years and Ziploc bag it and throw it in the freezer and have that sweet corn flavor all winter with very little work. Magic.
You want to follow up, Stephanie?
That sounds great. You know, I asked one of the farmers here in Red Hook about it, who had a farm stand, and he said that really all corn seed is genetically modified because of bugs or I forgot what he said, but he said all the seeds are genetically modified.
Well, some are modified in a bad way, and some of them are botanically enhanced. Most of the food we eat has been modified in some sort. Celery, tomatoes, they didn't look like that, you know? They look like
celery.
Yeah, didn't look like that. Hey, Stephanie, we got to take a break here, but thank you very much. What do you mean celery didn't look like that? It's green, it's a stalk. It's got to be the same.
Well, I mean, I grow lovage, which is the original celery, and there's hardly any stalk. It's mostly just big stems with leaves that are twice as pungent, you know?
Okay, well, let's hold that thought. 800-348-2551 is the number. Chef Rick Orlando, it's peak harvest. We'll be back. Food Friday, Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Home stretch now with Chef Rick Orlando here, peak harvest. And Rick Orlando, before we get back to the emails and phones, as you know, vegetables and such, it's not my strong suit. This salad is the best salad ever. What is it?
That is my Thai watermelon salad, and it's pretty simple. It's watermelon, cucumber,
amazing,
a little chili, red onion, peanuts, and then mint and basil and cilantro from the garden. But the dressing is that great Southeast Asian thing. I call it climbing the ladder.
What do you
salty,
mean?
Salty, sweet, sour. So I start with a little lime juice and a little vinegar. And then I add a little sugar. And I mix it in and keep adding until it tastes, you taste sweet and sour. It's not too sweet, not too sour. And then for the salt, I add Thai fish sauce. And you add a few drops of fish sauce at a time until you have your tongue saying, oh, my God, I taste everything. Then you add a little more of everything else. It's climbing the ladder. Get that flavor to where it's really
peak,
really pinnacle.
Yeah.
And then you just toss it with the vegetables and the watermelon. And it is really so addictive. And then the crunchy peanuts are great in there.
I love the peanuts in there.
Yeah.
You know, good God almighty, that is incredible. That the watermelon, I was real skeptical about it. But this is just incredible.
There you go. I mean, everyone makes Greek watermelon salad. Works on the same concept, the salty feta. And it's delicious, and I really like it. But this, to me, is next level, absolutely next level. Now, you go to my website, go down recipes. There's a recipe blog, and you'll see harvest recipes. Click there. I think most of these recipes are up.
Now, did you serve this Thai watermelon salad at any of your restaurants?
We served it at the restaurant very popularly. We served it with crispy tofu or crispy shrimp or crispy pork on top of it.
Mm.
One of the things I learned from some friends in South Asia with something like that, which is really good, is you get a bowl of steaming hot rice.
Okay.
And you put the cold watermelon salad on top.
Oh, like a McDLT.
I guess.
Yeah, sure.
And you just eat that for lunch. The sweet, hot, cold, sour, salty, every flavor you could think of. And it's super delicious. We also serve it a lot when I'm making grilled fish. I'll serve it as a side.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
For fish.
You know? I dig it with steak, too, to be honest with you.
Yeah, possibly.
All right, this email from Gene, and then we'll go back to the phones. Gene writes, ghost peppers, help. I was gifted a beautiful ghost pepper plant, parentheses, yikes. Help, can I dehydrate the peppers? Do you have a good thought for very careful use / rationing so I don't overpower dishes? I don't want to waste these beautiful peppers. And that's from Gene.
Okay, so habaneros, ghost peppers, all those really hot, savage peppers, here's the way I do it. The best way to do them is leave them on the plant as long as you can, and then rip the plant out of the ground without picking the peppers and hang it upside down, maybe on your deck, you know, shake the dirt
off.
I've
seen that.
And that allows all the sugars naturally to go into the peppers. It gives them more sweetness. You can leave it for anywhere from, depending on the weather, right, 3 days to 2 weeks. At that point, what I would do is I would put them in little sealable plastic bags and freeze them. And then when you want one, you take it from the freezer, and it's in suspended animation. It'll taste as fresh as regular. Now, here's a really great trick I learned with using these kind of peppers. Say you want to make a Caribbean-style soup, like a fish chowder.
Yeah.
And you want that flavor of the ghost pepper, but you don't want too much heat. Instead of cutting it up, and let me point out, mincing them small is the biggest mistake, because a small piece is like a bee sting. Now you have 100 bee stings in your dish. Take the pepper by the stem and use your knife and just score it, like 2 or 3 cuts in it, almost like a flow-through tea bag.
Yeah.
And float it on top of your soup or on top of your beans or on top of your rice. Put the lid on and let it cook, and the flavor is going to permeate. When it's all done, you'll have a nice soft pepper. So for the people that care to partake, they can mix it into their food. For those who don't, can look at it and tremble. And the giggles will be that the flavor and some heat will be all through the food. But the flavor, we used to call them cantaloupes from hell, because they've got this melony kind of beautiful flavor. But then, of course, they hurt a lot.
They hurt a little later on.
Yeah, ghost peppers are, I don't want to say they're a novelty pepper, because they're traditionally, I think, from Nigeria. Well, they're traditionally from here, but then bred in Nigeria. All peppers come from our hemisphere. But there's these Carolina Reapers, you know, there's all these peppers that are, have been developed to be hotter and hotter and hotter. They're fine. Once you've hit Scotch Bonnet Habanero, you've got all the heat and flavor you want, unless you're one of those masochistic aficionados.
Or you're just trying to prove that you're an excellent person and can eat the hottest.
Masochistic aficionado, exactly.
So you talk about freezing.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a show on cryogenics. And when you're freezing a cadaver, the problem is, over long periods of time, from what I understand, the cellular structure is affected by the freezing. You said you could freeze these things and they'll be just like new when you take them out. Isn't there any damage from the freezing?
No, when they thaw, they may collapse on themselves, be a little soggy.
Yeah.
But don't forget, the flesh is so thin. You're talking millimeters of flesh. It's not like you're freezing an apple. That there's very little damage that can happen. But the flavor, I've used frozen habanero. At the restaurant, we had a farm that would grow us peppers. And right around this time of year, maybe a little later, we would get like 30 or 40 pounds. That would last us until summer. So we would do we use 7 ounces in each recipe of Purple Haze. So we would weigh 7 ounces and freeze them in bags. And when we need to make a recipe from right from there, right into the food
processor.
Amazing.
All right. And you're not a real dehydrating fella?
I like dehydrating some peppers. I find that habaneros, they get way hotter, number one, because
you're concentrating it.
You're concentrating. You're losing the liquids and the juices.
Yeah.
I like to dry like Anaheim peppers, poblanos. That's how you get an ancho chili.
Mm.
You get a completely different type of flavor. Sure, you can dry them, but I think freezing them is the best way to
go. You know, fun fact, this I think is the first time we've ever used the word cadaver during a Food Friday. So that's you're part of history here. Let's go to Schenectady.
Cadavers are cool. They're a good band also.
Susie, you're on with Rick Orlando.
So, Ray, I just wanted to say that you really, I know you already said you're going to, but you need to take Rick up on this olive oil challenge. We traveled to Spain this year, and we went to this beautiful olive orchard where they press their own oil and had this wonderful tour. And then our tour guide took us back for a tasting, and we were traveling with teenagers. And it was kind of like a wine tasting. And they told us about how they grade the olive oil, and so they use these blue cups so you can't see the color of the olive oil. And they had us sniff it, and he was teaching us all about it. And he's like, if it's a good oil, you should smell things like tomato and fresh grass.
Artichoke.
And when he had us sniff it, I was, like, all of us, our minds were blown to smell fresh-cut grass. Mm. And it was so wonderful.
So then we
sipped it. We tasted it. And you could absolutely tell the difference. It was a revelation to me. And then he had some orange, like, tinged olive oil. Mm. And he served it over chocolate ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredible.
Well,
it was
olive
so
oil
great.
Is one of the greatest foods on the planet. I mean, there's nothing better on the planet
Absolutely.
Than olive oil. It's one of the secrets
of
life.
Yeah, and we were referring to it as Spain's liquid gold.
Well, when you get a chance, go to my website and explore mine, because Sicily and Puglia also are some of the best olive oils.
Similar climate?
In the world. Yeah, I think that
drier in Sicily.
Puglia's on the Adriatic. Puglia, it depends on the parts of Sicily. Like, our olive oil comes from the lowest part of Palermo province, which is pretty much like Northern California.
Yeah.
It's small mountains and buttes and stuff, so it's pretty higher elevation,
yeah,
which is great. But
Susie, thank
olive oils
you.
Don't, olive trees well, don't need a lot of rain. They don't irrigate. They don't spray. They don't do anything.
You know, you had mentioned that this olive oil of which you spoke earlier is from one spot.
Yeah.
And, you know, Susie brought up this business about you can taste the tomatoes and the fresh-cut grass and things. And that's sort of like a terroir sort of
exactly.
thing, right? But when you are making a like a blended scotch or something, one of the benefits of that is that you are evening it out and you can make the character the way you want it. When you have a single, which would be akin to a single barrel liquor, when you have a single location olive oil, you have to be really sold on the terroir.
Well, this olive oil is not one type of olive. It's from one area, one valley. There's Nocciolaro, there's Castis, I can't remember now, Belice, two different types of olives. One of them that they let get almost ripe. They start to get like a little purplish hue on them.
Yeah.
And the other ones are bright green. So they're blending two types
of
olives.
So it is a blend.
It's a blend. Most good olive oils are blended types of olives. Big industrial olive oil could be anything, right? They just buy as many olives as they can get, crush them, blend them. Again, cook with it. It's fine. Some of them are pretty tasty. I got a Greek one we get at home. It's pretty tasty. I get it wholesale. But when you get a pure single source means that it hasn't been pressed, put in the back of an oil truck, driven somewhere else, dumped into another tank, you know, that whole thing.
Rob writes in, freezing cadavers is the easy part. It's the thawing that's the difficult part. Hey, Rob, you make a point.
Well, it depends. You know, in the restaurant, we have something we call slacking it out.
I'm sorry?
You just put it on a sheet and put it in your cooler for a day.
But not specifically cadavers
well,
in the restaurant.
Well, I mean, animal
all right,
cadavers.
Understood. We'll call the health department later. Let's go to Linda in Troy. Linda,
hi,
you're
Linda.
On.
Oh. So hi there. Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I've got a bumper crop of peaches here, and I was wondering, Rick, if you've got any interesting ideas for savory dishes I could make with them.
Well, peaches are really interesting because sometimes when they're really ripe off the tree, they're one of heaven's gifts, right? Unfortunately, mm-hmm. most of us don't get to eat peaches that way very frequently. And sometimes when they're frozen for making pies, et cetera,
they get an edge. They get
they're almost frozen?
Yeah.
Oh, I found frozen peaches to have really good flavor. But what I like to make is we've had bumper crops of peaches, farmers showing up. I love all variations on the chutney theme.
Mm.
So we make peach chutney, right? And you can make mm-hmm. them. There's so many different recipes. Some of the English chutneys are pretty straightforward. Onions, sugar, vinegar. Some of the Indian ones, you may add some clove, some cumin seed, some cardamom, molasses instead of sugar, cook it down. And then the other thing, which I find really delicious, is making peach ketchup.
What?
Peach ketchup is great. Where you take your peaches, you pit them, you put them in a pot with a few tomatoes or tomato paste, vinegar, water, salt, and I like to use molasses, but you can use sugar. And then you want to add your little ketchup-y flavors, which be a little pinch of, you can use either citric acid or like lemon juice,
okay,
pinch of clove, you know, pinch of allspice. You cook it down and then you run it through a food mill and you have peach ketchup and it's super delicious.
What would you put it on? I mean,
what would you put ketchup on?
But
most
it's
of the ketchup you eat now is garbage. It's all full of corn syrup. So it's a real ketchup.
That's
right?
What I'm saying. Ketchup, as we know it, is fairly fairly sweet. But what are you going to put? Peaches are really sweet.
It's much sweeter now than it used to be.
Right.
Since they went to high fructose corn syrup. Because I can taste. I don't buy ketchup unless it's made with sugar. Well, though we do make it. But peaches are not. You're balancing with tomatoes and vinegar and sugar. So like we said, climb the ladder. You want to make sure you have enough acid. But peach ketchup is a trip. And you could then, if you know how to can, you can can it. Otherwise, it'll stay in the fridge for as long as ketchup. It'll stay in the fridge for months, especially if you use your acidulation, some lemon juice in it or some citric acid. But look it up. Google recipes for peach ketchup. You'll be surprised at how many people do it, how great it is on a sandwich, on a hamburger.
Mm, okay.
Even on the side with like a pork chop, you can dip it in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Linda.
Okay, but just pretty much just along as a garnish, you know, there's nothing like, I mean, I know, like, I was thinking peaches with prosciutto.
Of course, peaches with prosciutto is fantastic. Peaches with mozzarella and tomatoes, unbelievable. You put peaches on that plate.
Or grilling.
Grilling peaches. So when I grilled peaches, the restaurant, we would take a little bit of olive oil, and we would add a little bit of maple syrup to it and stir it up. And you cut the peach in half and pop out the pit. And brush it with that, and then find a really hot spot on your grill and just leave them in one place for 2 or 3 minutes so they get black lines of char, because that tastes like almost like a toasted marshmallow, right? You get that caramelization, that little blackness, and then you can serve them on the side again with a hearty meat dish. You can serve them on the side with intense cheeses. Grilled peaches are great.
All right, Linda, thanks a lot. Have a great weekend. Appreciate the call. Rick Orlando, we're about out of time here, my friend. If people want to find out more about the 8 zillion things you're doing at every given moment, or they want to find out about your tours and such, how do they get in touch with you?
It's very easy. My name is Rick Orlando. There's no K in Rick.
Rick, R-I-C.
R-I-C Orlando. You go to my website, all my socials there. I'm also Chef Rick Orlando on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. Social media is crucial, but I'm everywhere and everybody knows about it. So come find me and say hi to me and sign up for my email list because you'll find out all the exciting things I do.
Man, it is great having you on this program, and the watermelon salad.
Thai watermelon salad.
It's a real winner, man. All right. Good. Support comes from River Valley Co-op, featuring local and organically grown groceries in Northampton and East Hampton. More information at rivervalley.coop or co-op. Nine Pin Cider Works, Albany. New York hard cider from local apples. Nine Pin Cider's fall seasonal apple, Pie Secco, is now available. Open 7 days, starting at 11 a.m. NinePinCider.com. Once again, thanks to Chef Rick Orlando for being with us today. Thank you for listening. Great calls, great emails, as always. Zach Malloy is our engineer, as always. Phone screened by Dr. Norman Konarkiewicz. Always a fine job, sir. I'm Ray Graff. See you Monday at 2 p.m. for a Medical Monday. Meantime, have yourself a splendid weekend and stand by for a lovely program.